All right. We're running just a little bit behind time, and we want to talk this morning also about the 2010 is the year of the census. That is the time in the United States when everybody in this country is counted so that there are accurate records of who is where and what's going on. And the census count, of course, is used for a number of things. The allocation of federal and state monies to various localities and counties, the apportionment of congressional seats and legislative seats at the state level, state senate, state assembly, and numerous other kinds of information is relied upon. Numerous other services are relied upon for this information. Unfortunately, in many, many states, in most states, including New York, the census count for people who are incarcerated, and particularly people who are incarcerated in rural upstate communities, are counted in the community of incarceration as opposed to the community of actual residence. And, of course, this skews the numbers and in many ways disenfranchises our local community people, certainly in New York City, and because of the overwhelming numbers, disproportionate numbers of Latino and black men and women in the prison system, the black community is often shortchanged as a result of this census counting. We are joined this morning by Peter Wagner, the executive director of the Prison Policy Initiative, that has done some extensive research around this question. Good morning, Peter. How are you?
Very good. How are you doing, Eddie?
I'm fine. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. And we're also joined by New York State Senator Eric Schneiderman, who is the sponsor of a major piece of legislation that seeks to change the census counting. Good morning, Senator. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Eddie. Glad to be here. Thanks for having us on.
Thank you very much for taking time out of your morning schedule. I heard from your office that it's a very busy, busy schedule. In fact, we're catching you on the fly, so to speak. But we really appreciate you joining us this morning. Let's start with you, Senator. Tell us a little bit about the legislation that you have sponsored on the Senate side and that New York State Assemblyman Adriano Espiat sponsors on the Assembly side. What exactly is it designed to do?
Well, our bill, which is Senate Bill 1633,
mm-hmm.
change one thing, the one critical thing about how we could go about the next census. Our bill would require that instead of counting prisoners, the people who are residents in New York State prisons, as residents of the district where the prison is located for census purposes, we would count them at their last known home address. So this would shift the tens of thousands of people who are counted under the current system and have been for decades as residents of these, which tend to be rural areas up near the Canadian border. This would shift that population back down to the communities they come from, and it would increase the voting power and the political power of those communities. Right now, the prisoners are there bulking up the districts of other senators whose districts, frankly, don't serve them. They don't stay in those districts when they get out of prisons, and it costs money and it costs political power
mm-hmm.
to the poor communities that they come from.
Mm-hmm. And almost inevitably, as I understand it, and you confirmed this if it's correct, most of the communities which contribute so disproportionately to the prison system are right here in the counties here in New York City.
Absolutely. I represent Washington Heights, among other parts of Manhattan and the Bronx. We have quite a few people who mm-hmm. go to prison. They all come home. They all come home. They don't stay up in Dannemora or Attica or these places up far from their homes. And yet we don't get to count them for census purposes. Last time there was a census, there were seven state senate districts that only met the minimum population requirement because you had counted the prisoners.
Wow.
And I have to say that this is a national issue because
mm-hmm.
of our 30-year program in this country, the tragic 30-year program of mass incarceration of essentially of young black and Latino men. We have 2.4 million people in prisons in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And we really can't afford the injustice of counting all those people as residents of prison districts and denying the resources and the political power that they would bring to their home communities if we count them at their last known address. So we're trying in New York to lead the way on this. No state has done it yet, but we think we can get the bill passed and get Governor Patterson to sign it this year and really send a message to the rest of the country and take a major step forward for civil rights and for social and economic justice.
Absolutely. Pierre Wagner has been in the forefront of the research that has established some of the things that we're talking about today, particularly as it relates to apportionment and the allocation of state and federal dollars to these upstate rural communities. Tell us a little bit, Peter, about the research that you did and the report that you presented. I guess it must have been at least 5 years ago, or maybe
actually
more.
About eight.
8 years ago, okay.
And I completed a report that looked at where incarcerated people come from in New York State and in what districts they're incarcerated in. I finished this the same day that the New York State Legislature finished their legislative districting plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember showing up at one of these hearings in March of 2002, and I said, stop. You can't count. You can't base your districts on where incarcerated people are. It's not just fair. It's not just unfair. It actually violates the New York State Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
The New York State Constitution says that incarceration does not change a residence.
Mm-hmm.
If you're locked up in New York, you still are a legal residence of where you used to live.
Mm-hmm.
But yet New York State is basing its districts on data that comes from the federal government, but that happens to not meet the needs of the New York State Constitution
mm-hmm.
or of the people of New York.
Right.
And to say that this did not go over well when I showed up and said, please stop and start over, would be an understatement. But now, 8 years later, we have just enough time to change how the data is used in New York. It's too late to change what the Census Bureau is going to do nationally in 2010. The census is in 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still enough time for Senator Schneiderman's bill for the state to take the federal census data and fix this one very small but very significant problem
mm-hmm.
and draw districts that are actually based on where the people of New York State actually reside.
Right. Senator Schneiderman, the bill that you introduced, does that bill contain language that speaks to the New York State constitutional issue?
Well, it does not specifically cite the Constitution, but as Peter has indicated, there's a fundamental element of unfairness in this and injustice. I do think it's a violation of the Constitution. The courts have not ruled on that yet. But what is clear is that by passing a simple statute, same way we pass any bill in Albany, we can do it differently. We are under no requirement to use the federal census data for prisoners. And this is something a lot of people don't understand. They say, oh, well, if the census counts them that way, you have an obligation to use that data. We do not. In fact, the state constitution indicates that, and there is case law on this, that for voting purposes, a prisoner is a resident of the community they come from, not the location of the prison. Frankly, for all other purposes, if for tax purposes, if you owe taxes to the city of New York, but you go up to a prison upstate, that doesn't mean the city of New York doesn't come after you for the taxes. If you want to get divorced, you have to go back to where, to the community that you come from. So it really is a fundamental injustice. I think that Peter's right. I think this approach is more consistent with the New York Constitution. But we don't have to go through the difficult and lengthy process of litigating this. We can just pass a statute. And I do think that there's support in both the Assembly and the Senate for this. And finally, we have a governor who's willing to sign it. Keep in mind that 10 years ago, when Peter was being given the cold shoulder, that Joe Bruno was running the Senate and George Pataki was the governor.
Absolutely,
so,
yes.
Very different time in Albany, and I'm very, very, very hopeful that New York will once again take its role as a leader in progressive causes and that we will make this change and then inspire other states to do the same thing.
I know that you have been one of the major leaders in the Democratic Party that had been organizing around unsuccessfully, we should add, for the Democrats to regain the majority in the New York State Senate, which you now have done by a very slim margin. I would assume, and you correct me if I'm wrong, that with the passage of this legislation, that margin may be increased, hopefully to the benefit of the communities that lack representation. Talk a little bit about the political aspect of the situation and how that may portend positively for legislation that has been bottlenecked, stalled, delayed, denied up until this point, up until the point that the Democrats receive the majority.
Well, yeah, that is an important point because politics is really at the heart of this. I mean, the determination to build all these prisons, which happened throughout the 1980s and 1990s, far, far, far from the city, you know, which creates problems for prisoners and their families and for developing reentry programs and everything else, this was clearly a calculated political decision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they wanted to bulk up these rural areas in upstate New York that tended to elect Republicans and tend to elect very conservative Republicans to that. So it really is almost like adding insult to injury. They adopt these mass incarceration programs that take our young people out of the community, lock them up, the Rockefeller drug laws being the most famous example of them, which I'm very proud to say that one of the first beneficial effects of the Democrats taking control of the state Senate was we finally managed to repeal the Rockefeller drug laws last year. But the Rockefeller drug laws and other harsh sentencing provisions filled up the jails and the prisons of the state of New York in these rural areas and inflated the voting population. So what you have is a situation where you're hurting us in three different ways. First of all, you're taking our young people away. You're locking them up, in many cases, unnecessarily.
Mm-hmm.
The central problem is addiction rather than criminality. We're taken out of the community. Second, you use their numbers, even though they can't vote. You can't vote while you're incarcerated in New York. But they're counted for census purposes, so it makes it that the people who are in those districts actually have more voting power than the people in the districts that the prisoners come from.
Mm-hmm.
And third, the prisoners all come home,
mm-hmm.
and we're denied the extra resources we would get from the state and federal government through programs that we would get if you counted them in their home district.
Mm-hmm.
So in Washington Heights, we lose people. I don't get the credit for them when it comes time to draw my district, so we need to add additional people into my district that you don't have to add into these districts upstate. And we don't get any of the resources for reentry programs, for health care, for anything else that these people need when they come back to our community.
Wow. And on top of that, it seems that as a result of having built those prisons in those rural upstate areas, particularly areas that were hard-pressed economically, we find that there is a proliferation of jobs and contracts and economic sustenance that has revived many of those communities economically, to the detriment, of course, of the downstate area. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, this is sort of a grim legacy of this period of time when, frankly, because of political cowardice, my counterparts all over America were afraid to be accused of being soft on crime, so we passed passed harsh sentencing laws that have had this effect. I mean, I am in favor of economic development programs for the people in upstate. We've been losing jobs. The economy's been in terrible shape for many, many years, for probably 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
But it is inhumane and unjust and unsustainable to rely on prisons as an economic development tool.
Right.
You know, and really, I don't want to, you know, accuse anyone of anything. People suggest that part of the reason the representatives from these areas vote for harsher sentencing laws and vote to limit parole is because they want to keep the prisons full. They want to keep our young people going to prison because it's an economic development issue in their districts. That's a pretty severe charge. I don't want to make it against anyone personally.
That's all right. I'll make it. You're right.
There certainly are people who believe that.
Yes, I'm one of them, quite frankly. And I think that all the evidence suggests that is true. I think that, you know, for instance, the fact that the rates and incidence of crime, and particularly violent crime, in those communities is almost zero. And at the same time, the representatives from those communities, particularly conservative Republicans, and we've named some names on this show. I'm not going to go into all of that right now because I don't have them all in front of me and I don't want to misquote, but certainly there have been people in the New York State Senate who were Republicans whose districts were inflated and who made a tremendous amount of support for harsh sentences, less parole, and the criminalization of young black and Latino men in the urban communities as an underlying rationale for keeping the prisons full. I remember, in fact, just last year, that there was a juvenile facility that I think was just about empty. And yet, that facility, in terms of the employment, was being run as if they were at full capacity. And when the governor attempted to close the facility and redeploy the employees, he was met with a tremendous amount of opposition, both politically and as well as with the union. So there are some very serious questions at stake. Peter Wagner has done a tremendous amount of research, not only here in New York, but at the national level around this question. Are there other initiatives, Peter, that are taking place in other states that are similar to what New York is doing, or will the legislation that Senator Schneiderman has introduced become the model for the United States?
A lot of states are trying to catch up with New York. There's a lot of interest in this in Wisconsin and Illinois and Maryland and Oregon and Texas and a few other states. Mm-hmm. But New York is very much in the lead at trying to come up with a state-based solution to this problem that's being imposed by the Federal Census Bureau on the states. Because what the Census Bureau is enabling certain districts and more importantly, one industry to dominate the state. Because this is an issue of fundamental fairness, and we have a real problem that one industry is putting its thumb on the scales of democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, I'll be blunt when you were being polite before. So Senator Volker has referred to some of the proposed changes to the Rockefeller drug laws
mm-hmm.
as a jailbreak.
Mm-hmm.
He opposed it.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's been a law and order Republican since the beginning of time. He's been supporting building more prisons and been one of the leading opponents to closing prisons.
Mm-hmm.
And he's someone who, he's someone who politically is a believer in prisons, and also there's a lot of prisons in his district. So for those two reasons, we can expect him to always be a supporter of prisons and an opponent of saner criminal justice policies.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the problem. When we pad out his legislative district with people who are not his constituents, two things happened. He gets his constituents get extra representation from him,
mm-hmm.
and then the people that should be in his district get bumped into other districts.
Mm-hmm.
So a district to his south that has very few prisons but has big colleges, then instead of it becoming an education district, it becomes another prison district.
Right.
And you start to see upstate New York speak with one voice on prisons in a way that they're unable to speak on any other issue.
Mm-hmm.
Because prisons are managing to extend the influence. The prison census and prison-based gerrymandering allows pro-prison interests in the state of New York a disproportionate say.
Mm-hmm.
So the 44,000 people that are missing from New York City and credited upstate help change the whole political priorities of the entire upstate region because of how they're distributed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the problem.
Okay. You used the term, hold on for 1 second, we have to do a station ID. When we come back, I want you to explain what the term gerrymandering actually means. It's 11:31. You're listening to WPAI in New York, 99.5 FM, Peace and Justice Radio. This is On the Count, the Prison and Criminal Justice Report. My name is Eddie Ellis, and I am talking with New York State Senator Eric Schneiderman, the sponsor of a major piece of legislation in the New York State Senate that will allow for, permit people who are in prison to be counted in the county of residence, the county of last known residence, as opposed to the county of incarceration. And our other guest is Peter Wagner, the executive director of the Prison Policy Initiative's think tank and research group that has done the research that established the rationale for this legislation. I'm sorry, Peter, explain gerrymandering to our audience who may not be aware of that term.
Sure. Gerrymandering is the process of every decade, state legislative districts have to be redrawn to make sure that each district contains the same number of people. This
mm-hmm.
We call this the one-person, one-vote rule. This is how we ensure that everyone has the same access to government, regardless of where they live. But gerrymandering, and it's named after the governor of Massachusetts about 120 years ago, mm-hmm. is the process of drawing the districts in funny shapes to control the outcome.
Right.
Because the way we think our political process works is that every 4 years we go into the ballot box, close the curtain, and pick our leaders.
Mm-hmm.
The way it actually works, gerrymandering works, is that every decade a small number of our leaders go into a room, close the door, and then they pick us.
Mm-hmm.
And so typically, you know, you draw the district in a funny shape to control the outcome. To control
so that the people in, excuse me for getting you off. The lines of the district, the boundaries and borders of a particular district are drawn by these guys in the back room so that the people within those boundaries are, say, all Republicans and can be fairly well counted on to vote Republican as opposed to including within that district maybe neighborhoods that historically have voted Democrat. Is that what I hear you saying?
That's correct, and this is something that Senator Schneiderman knows very well because after the previous census, they changed his district.
Mm-hmm.
And his house didn't move, but they changed the shape of his district to put him into different communities in the hope that he would not be reelected.
Right, okay, all right.
Which actually, I owe the Republicans a debt of gratitude. They moved me into a district that has got a large number of Dominican Americans, and now... it's gotten me involved in a lot of great issues on immigration and things that I probably wouldn't have gotten to. So thanks to the Republicans. they've made me more fervent than ever. But Peter's point is well taken.
It forced you to learn how to speak Spanish.
Claro. Yes. So Peter's point is very well taken. If you look at, we have districts that are have very bizarre shapes, but they're also the control that the old Senate leadership, the Republicans, had over redistricting also has had a severe impact on the racial makeup of the Senate. If you look at Long Island, over the last 40 years, the population shifts in Long Island have been massive. The one thing that is the same every time they draw the districts is that they cut the African-American community into four little pieces. So it's spread around amongst different districts, and it prevents us from electing an African-American senator from Long Island. We have the votes there to do it, but they have the power to split. It's called fracturing.
Right.
They fracture the community so that you prevent us from actually electing someone who could be elected if you put all of those those communities together where they probably belong.
Mm-hmm. Is there a reasonable possibility that, given the Democratic control of the Senate this year as well as the Assembly, that as these districts are redrawn, they'll be redrawn in a more equitable kind of way?
Yes, I there certainly is. I think so. I hope so. I mean, I favor taking politics completely out of the redistricting process. But even if you know, we're not able to pass a bill to do that, we'll have a much fairer set of districts. I mean, think about the state of New York, right? We have more than five Democrats for every three Republicans. We're approaching the point where we are a 2-to-1 Democratic state. Mm-hmm. And yet the Republicans have controlled the state Senate up until last year. They didn't do that because they're such great politicians. They did that because they drew the districts with care.
Okay.
To prevent us from electing Democrats.
Okay. All right. So... as the phrase goes, turnabout is fair play.
It certainly is, and I think that even if we just had a neutral body,
mm-hmm.
which is what you know some of us favor in the long run, drawing the districts, I think we would come up with we would certainly not come up with anything that looks like the districts we have now.
Mm-hmm.
We have one district that runs from central New York and Ithaca all the way to the Hudson River. I mean, we have wild districts that mm-hmm. have been drawn to preserve the Republican Senate majority. And enough is enough.
Okay. Well, thank you both for joining us this morning on the Count. It certainly is very informative and gives our listening audience certainly a much broader perspective, not only of what's taking place in Albany, but certainly this legislation that you've put in that is of such importance to our community particularly, but certainly to all of New York City. We thank you very much for joining us, and we look forward to talking with the two of you again soon.
Thank you very much, Eddie.
Thanks for having us, Eddie.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you very much, Senator.
Okay, take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Senator Peter Senator Eric Schneiderman and Peter Wagner, two major advocates for the redistricting, the reapportionment of census counting for men and women who are incarcerated in rural and state communities, a major, major political piece that not often discussed, certainly not on commercial radio, and that will have a tremendous impact educationally, politically, economically, employment-wise, on the city of New York, and particularly on communities of color, Latino communities, black communities, poor communities in Manhattan, the Bronx, and Brooklyn, which are the three counties in which so many disproportionate numbers of our young people find themselves in the prison system. So if this legislation passes, and it appears that it will, there will be some very, very fundamental changes in the count and in the distribution of jobs, money, and other kinds of things. So we're going to keep a close eye on that and bring you up to date with the latest happenings as they come along.